This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning, I'm Sharad Kutan, and you're listening to The Morning Run. On today's property show, we talk to Chris Tan of Chur Associates again on the monthly property legal clinic. He tackles two problems for our listeners. The first is from Olivia, who has an issue with her neighbours upstairs in her apartment block.
I'm an owner and resident in a condo in KL. There have been recurring leaks from the flat upstairs. When we reported this to our management office, no action was taken, and they refused to provide contact details of our resident community members. As a result, we had to vacate our master bedroom, and the room was moldy despite us cleaning up every time mold started. And the furniture and our personal belongings were also ruined. Is there anything we could do?
So, good morning, Chris, and Happy New Year to you. In the case of Olivia, what are her rights here?
Okay, Gongxi Fa Chai to everyone who celebrate the New Year. And let's look at this one. Let's look at Olivia's part here, because we need to establish a few things, because based on the question, it's not very clear still. We can assume that it's actually a residential unit, a condominium in Kuala Lumpur. And then the other thing is that what I'm not very sure is the time frame. As in, like, you know, whether they have moved in, just delivered from the developers, or is it still during the defect liability period time or after the defect liability period time?
So take us through both scenarios then.
Okay, let's put it through to you. Number one is that if it is still during the defect liability period, right, notwithstanding the formation of the committee, which is the JMB or the MC, would could possibly have been done. If it is still within the defect liability periods, then the claim could be submitted to the developers, and therefore developers liable to then rectify it.
Okay.
Okay, there's a 5% of the purchase price being set aside in stakeholding with the appointed solicitor and lawyers.
Okay.
So what can Olivia do is that Olivia can then write to the developer first.
Okay.
Right, and say that this is the problem, and if they don't rectify, they can then entitle to rectify on their own and then claim.
Or you can still claim, actually, even if you rectify yourself.
Correct.
Okay.
So, but there's some timeline and whatnot, but we suggest that first thing first, deal with the developers, right? So, if it is still within the defect liability period, typically, the current defect liability period is 24 months under the HDA Housing Development Act, all right? So, if this is not within the defect liability period, so which bring us to the next scenario, then the next question is that there's this statutory presumption that the responsibility for any leakages, what we call interfloor leakages in this case, is actually fall under the burden to prove otherwise by the owner of the unit upstairs.
Okay.
So if you have an interfloor leakage, let's say you are the victim, all right, and you can show that the leakage is actually originated from the top, all right, from the ceiling of your unit, then which means that it is the upper floor unit owner's burden to prove that he or she is not liable in this sense. So there's a shift in the Strata Management Act 2013, effective June 2015, to the effect that the owner of the upper floor is liable or is having the duty or burden to prove that he is not liable to the leakage.
This will be after the defect liability period.
Yes. So if it's during defect liability period, then we can all go to the developers.
Okay.
Right? Because still under warranty. Right? But it's after defect liability period, then there is a statutory presumption. In that sense, it's the upper floor unit to prove that he's innocent. Right? But there are still processes. Yes.
Take us through these processes then.
Okay. So for the interfloor leakage issue. So we look at, first of all, let's establish who is the management in this concern, right? Because although it shows that there's a residence committee members and all these things, my question is, is this JMB, is it an MC or whatever, right? You have to find the right parties. Then if there's the right party, then you write to the right party. By the way, the management office is good enough. You don't really have to contact the committee member in per se. Write to the management office. And when you write to the management office, then it is for the committee to do an inspection. The committee will then assign someone to do the inspection on the upper floor unit, right? And then form their conclusion. And when they form their conclusion, they have to come up with a cert. And it is cert to say that under the committee view, whether who is liable for this leakage. So the simple answer or simple analysis that we can find from here is that there could be three outcome out of here.
Okay.
Right? Outcome number one, it is the victim's unit.
The one who is below.
Below, right. That actually there's some problem within their own unit, within the compound of their own unit, that caused their own leakage. So that could be option one. All right. There's another another possible consequence, which is option two, which could be that we can prove that there is actually something from the upper floor unit.
Okay.
So if it's something from the upper floor unit, then what it means that is the upper floor is supposed to rectify the problem of the lower floor. All right. Of course, there's a third one. This is what we call the draw, right? What we call the draw, the win lose or draw in that sense. The third one is if the cause of the problem is actually originating from the common property. So, okay. For example, if it's originating from a common piping serving more than one unit, okay. Right? Then it is a common issue. So, common issue, who's supposed to rectify? Then it will be for the management, which mm-hmm. is the management corporation or the JMB, whichever is applicable at that moment, to rectify the same.
But in this case, all this seems well and good, but it's going to take a long time. It sounds like it's going to take a long process. In the meantime, the affected resident is going to have to move out, or they are going to have to incur a lot more cost when it comes to repairs to their unit. What happens during that time?
Okay, actually, under the Act, there is an expectation where the management body is supposed to take actions within 7 days from the date of a complaint. Right. Mm-hmm. So when during these 7 days, what happened is that the once you lodge the complaint within 7 days, the management body, be it the MC, be it the JMB, should actually carry out the inspection and form their conclusion.
Okay.
Now, if they don't do, then you can have your recourse with the Commission of Building. All right. Then the Commission of Building will then appoint the relevant people to step in and make the decision. All right. Now, if let's say after the rectification or whatever that is, there's still some issue, you can always refer to the Strata Management Tribunal. So it is good that there is two bodies that are trying to intervene here. One is the Commission of Building, the other one is the Strata Management Tribunal. However, of course, execution is another issue. Whatever is available to you under the law is one issue.
Mm-hmm.
So the inconvenience and all these things is, again, is something that we do not know. We cannot actually rectify those. But if it's consistent, there are always authority to help you. Like I said, Commissioner of Building is one, Strata Management Tribunal is another. Okay, so let's say if they don't do the inspection within 7 days, then your complaint is again the management body.
Right.
Okay, what if then after they have issued a cert to say that it's the above unit that is responsible and the above unit don't do, then you take the action against the above unit.
You're right.
Yeah, yeah.
So just to simplify matters, where does the condo management's responsibility end and where does the homeowner's begin?
Okay, let's put it this way. In terms of this, the management responsibility begin and end, let's put it this way, if it got to do with the common property. Okay, and there's another role for the management to facilitate the complaint. So which means that there's an expectation that if someone complains about the interfloor leakage,
mm-hmm.
so the responsibility begin when you file a claim. So the management body have to within 7 days do the inspection and issue the cert. Mm-hmm. All right. And if they've done that also, then they have discharged their obligations,
right.
Their duty. But it depends on the result. It could be one, two, or three, you know, as of just we have discussed just now.
Right.
So if it's result number three, where it's a draw as a result of a common property, then it continues for the management body. Why? Because then the management body will have to then rectify number three. Correct? But if it's one or two,
right.
Then the obligation end.
I see.
For the management body. And then whatever, when the management body own, then whoever claim then have to take over. Right.
So in this case, what would you suggest Olivia's next move to be?
I think number one is that officially Olivia should lodge an official complaint to the management. Because mm-hmm. in this case, I can see that Olivia is trying to get the contact to directly contact the committee members and
right.
all these things, which I think is unnecessary because all you need to do is a formal complaint acknowledged by the management office. One that is done, and then if there is no action taken within 7 days, then get the help of Commissioner Building, right? And again, if they still can't get any help, then do the Strata Management Tribunal bid. But if they do come back with a cert and all these things, depending on the result, then we will see which way we go. Right, that I've just told you where does the obligation of the management end.
We are talking to Chris Tan from Chur Associates, helping us address some issues from our listeners. In a little while, we'll talk about what happens when you have already paid a deposit to rent a home and the agent can't secure it for you. BFM 89.9. We are back on The Property Show on BFM 89.9, where we have Chur Associates Chris Tan to help sort out some listeners' problems. So this is an issue faced by Arif.
So this is my story. I'm very keen to rent a home in a particular neighborhood in KL. So when I found the condo unit I like, I approached an agent assigned to that property and paid my deposit. Over a period of about a month or so after I paid the deposit, the agent comes back to me to tell me that he let the unit out to someone who paid more than me. I then did some investigation on my own only to discover that the agent to whom I paid the deposit didn't even file the paperwork, which meant that the unit was still available and he allowed someone else to step it up.
Right, Chris, what is the process for a prospective tenant prior to taking up a rental?
I think a good important roadmap, if I can just outline, is very simple. First of all, you must ensure that the agent that you dealt with is a proper agent, that they have, in that case, there could be a registered agency, right? There's a name to it, there's a number to it, and the person who is representing could be an agent himself, could be a negotiator. Again, a negotiator have the rent tag, have the rent number, what we call REN, real estate negotiator. So these are the people who are authorized to deal with property rental in that sense. So what you do is that get the number, get the rent number, and call up the agency just to ensure that these are the right people to deal with. I thought that's a good start.
Number two, every right to do that, right?
Of course. Everyone have the right to do that. You can do the same on any professional for that matter. That's right. Why we all come with number, right? So that's number one. Number two is that you sign an offer to rent after checking all the details, special term have been incorporated into the offer to rent. So in that sense, in this case, Arif is trying to rent a unit. So whatever special condition they have put there, whatever renter, they need to pay deposit, they need to pay, all these things must be fully captured, all right? And then the next thing is that to book the unit, you need to pay the booking deposit to the agency as stakeholder required under the offer to rent. Normally it's 1 month in renter. So again, you pay it, gotta make sure that, you know, it's clear. Make sure that you pay it to the agency and not the negotiator, you know, in that sense. So make sure the landlord have also signed the offer to rent after you. So what happened is that you are the one who making an offer to the landlord. Of course, when you make an offer, when you pay the deposit, it also doesn't mean that the landlord must rent it to you.
Okay.
Okay, it only means that you're making the offer to the landlord and it's for the landlord to accept. So until and unless an offer is accepted, there is no contract.
These forms that you're supposed to sign prior to rental, are they standard forms?
They are standard to the agency. Let's put it this way. There is no statutory standard form as to how you rent a property. But they are standard from vary agency to agency, which they use from time to time, how to do this. So I encourage that everyone please take a read to this.
Yeah.
Because for all intent and purposes, it's normally a one-pager, not very complicated, right? But it is useful to look at it. And if there's thing that you do not agree, there's thing that you think that's lacking, please make sure that the person attend to you, be it an agent, be it a negotiator, these things are reflected accordingly.
What sort of points should you look out for in these forms to be careful of?
I suppose it's all the key things, you know, whether you're making the right offer, when should you move in, you know, are you having a rental fee period for renovation, things like that. Are you having a rental free period? Sometimes we do not know whether you have those things. And then is it a furnished unit? If it's a furnished unit, make sure that you know what kind of furniture you expect to be there when you move in, you know. And when are you getting the key? When are you getting the possession? How many months of rental deposit you're willing to pay? You know, who's responsible for the maintenance charges? Things like that. If there are special things that you want, for example, if you need to have cable TV to be installed, to make sure that those things are actually stated. Like I said, whatever you expect out of it, then it should be there.
Okay.
All right. So whatever you don't want, then you make sure that it's not there. Also. La. So that's why I said whatever is lacking, whatever is that is meaningful to you, you must put it there. So I think these are important things when you look at the standard form prepared by the negotiators or the agent.
So the process is that you put in a deposit, you sign the forms, it goes to the agent. Agent brings it over to the landlord.
Yes.
What happens after that then?
So the landlord will then look at the terms being offered. If they're happy and agreeable, they will sign.
At the point that you place a deposit, does that mean the unit is really off the market for that period?
Until it is accepted.
Okay.
I think it's basic contract law to everyone. It's everyone can make an offer. Until it is accepted, right? There is no contract. So at this point of you paying the deposit, at this point of you signing the offer to purchase, which is the standard form that we keep mentioning, and until unless a landlord signs, there is no contract.
So now it goes to over to the landlord. What happens then?
So the landlord can decide whether they want to accept the offer. Normally, there's only two things to do. Either you accept or you reject.
Okay.
Right? You can hang on to it, neither accept nor reject, right? But again, it is up to the offerer, which is the tenant, can revoke or withdraw the offer anytime if it is not accepted. So like I said, it's actually open to both. I think in this case, Arif, what he need to do originally should be having more follow-up instead of letting it wait for 1 month. Because it's quite interesting here because normally a tenant would be very keen to know when can he move in, you know, and all these things. So rightfully, he should monitor it. Rightfully, he should also check whether proper check have been banked in, you know, have to have better communication with the negotiator.
But at this point, he said he did some of his own investigation and found that his agent did not file the necessary paperwork. Is there something that he can do in this case?
Anything. Let's put it this way. Like I said, you know, notwithstanding that they have done the right thing and then put the deposit and the agent supposed to do the work, I think first thing first is call up the agency and find out what is the position of the agency in this case, how they deal with the negotiator, how they knew the specific agent in this case. If they are not happy and whatnot, just like any other professional, it's a regulated profession. So when it's a regulated profession, there is a board called the Board of Valuer and Estate Agencies, and today also include property managers, right?
The one we discussed earlier.
Correct. Yeah. So for all intent and purposes, this board is there if there's issue with this. So make a complaint to the agency first. If the agency does not give you a satisfactory action, of course, then you can make another complaint to the board. But in this case, like I said, it's also a case of following up. I mean, we do expect that the negotiator or the agents would do the right thing.
Okay.
Right? By processing the paperwork, by making the offer to the landlord. But if it's proved that it's negligent, but at the end of the day, what can you get? Like I said, what kind of damage have you suffered?
Well, you still need a house to stay in.
Correct. Yeah. So let's put it this way. I mean, it's not a case where it is a court case where you claim a lot of damages and whatnot, but it's more like a disciplinary actions against the relevant practitioner in that sense. So I think it is not a case for you to enrich yourself just to say, hey, how come I lose this? But in fact, you don't. In fact, you must also do as the tenant, in this case, Arif, he must also manage his exposure. Which means
you do end up losing quite a lot of time in this case.
Of course. But what do you quantify on the time?
Mm.
Like I said, you know, at the end of the day, it's also strange to me because if you put your money there for 1 month, and if it's not urgent enough for you to really follow it through, so my question is that, you know, time might not be so important to you. I mean, in the first place.
Now, getting the deposit return was also another hassle because he had a lot more forms to fill. You know, what has gone wrong here?
Well, let's put it this way. Each agency have their own procedure and policy to refund the booking deposit. Like I said, this is a stakeholder arrangement. There's no reason they need to hold on to it 1 day more. If it's not reasonable, again, the complaint can be done. Complaint can be lodged, right? But if it's within reasons, for example, there's a need for banks to transact here, transfer there, that requires some time,
right?
Then it's okay. Yeah.
And so to just sum it up, to prevent future incidences like this from happening to Arif or to any other listener, what's your advice?
I think my advice is make sure that you follow up. I think follow up from the landlord is very important because at least you want to know whether it's on or not on so they can move on in life, you know, because you make the offer for all intent, you know, landlord don't want to rent to you and it's absolutely their right in that sense. And therefore, you can move on and get another unit. Like I said, that's important. And get a copy of an offer to rent duly signed by both parties for your record. That's also another thing. I thought once they accepted it, I mean, that's not good enough. Make sure you get a copy, right? And then once you do that, then you have a basic contract form between the tenant and landlord. Then, of course, the next procedure will be prepare the tenancy agreement. So, like I said, if the landlord has signed an offer to rent and is now rejecting the enter the tenancy agreement with you, then you can refer this case for the clause in the offer to rent. Let's say they signed the offer to rent, accept, and yet don't want to sign a tenancy agreement. There would be some treatment as to how to deal with it in that sense. So, again, discretion is with the landlord. Must follow up And then you get your dream house.
That was Keith Kam speaking to Chris Tan of Chir Associates on our monthly property legal clinic. You can catch the full conversation by downloading the BFM app on Google Play and the Apple App Store. If you have any legal questions regarding your real estate investment, do write into property@bfm.my. We have the 10 o'clock news bulletin coming up, followed by Enterprise. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.